to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a Somerset GP and a lead for women and children. And today I'm delighted to be joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, GP and lead for mental health in Somerset.
And today we're talking about the perimenopause, and I'd like to introduce our guest, Amy. Amy, could you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got interested in the perimenopause?
Hi there. So I'm Amy Oldfield. I'm an online personal trainer and nutrition coach. And I've been working in the health and fitness industry for 11 years. And that whole time, I've always had a particular interest in helping women over 40, just because it's such a transitional time of life that I think can be really troubling, really confusing for a lot of women. And I'd love to help them navigate through that.
And can we start with some definitions? So we've done a couple of podcasts on the menopause that people are welcome to look for, but this is the first one we've done on specifically on the perimenopause. So, Kate, do you want to give us a medical definition of what the perimenopause is?
Well, if you break the word down, peri means around, and the menopause, as we know, is the period of life where women no longer produce the hormones that make them fertile. And so the perimenopause is the period of time just before the menopause where women have noticed a variety of difficulties with their health, I think. What would you say, Amy? How would you define it?
So I think it's really, really important to define it, because for years, we've only just really thought of menopause more broadly. And I think only in recent years are women starting to realise that there's this thing called perimenopause. And so they're starting to experience a variety of symptoms and changes in their body as early as about 35, when menopause isn't even on the radar for so many women. And so To define perimenopause for me, it's between 2 and 12 years before menopause, with menopause being 12 months since your last bleed.
I think that's a really important thing to say, Amy. And absolutely, we were not taught as clinicians about this time before the menopause. It's only fairly recently come to the fore. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the symptoms that you see that women are experiencing?
Yeah, sure. And like I said before, it can be anywhere from 2 to 12 years, which is a bit of a shocker, right? That's a really long time. And some women cruise through it, like not even really aware where they are in their menopausal phase of life. And others really experience symptoms, like I said, quite early on, as early as 35. And those symptoms tend to change as you get closer to actual menopause. So the women that I work with, typically those first symptoms that are coming up are fatigue and low energy, which of course we can start to attribute to many other things. You know, women just think, oh, maybe I'm not getting enough sleep, maybe I'm not eating well enough, maybe I'm not doing enough exercise or doing too much. And so it's that energy piece first and foremost that I see as the first symptom. And then there can be sleep disruptions, insomnia, and then later on, we start to get into the night sweats and the hot flushes. And my area of expertise is the weight gain that seemingly creeps on to the belly, even though women feel like they haven't changed anything in their lifestyle.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say that as a woman, the course of health for women peaks and troughs throughout your life, doesn't it? You start your periods, then you start your fertile period, then you have children, then you have a stressful life where you're trying to balance working and children. So for women, it's quite often that they will often think there's another reason for why they're feeling tired and why they're feeling unwell, and they'll put it to the back of their mind and they will get on with life. And you're saying that there are things that women could be doing that would help to support them better at that time of life. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the earlier we start, the easier our perimenopausal and menopausal journey is going to be. And I think that's one of the reasons why menopausal symptoms have got worse over the last 20 or 30 years, because there are so many competing things in a woman's life that cause her to undersleep, overwork, put too much stress and pressure on herself. And so we're seeing those menopausal symptoms happen earlier, and expressing themselves more dramatically as well. And so the more we can do to look after our health and well-being as young as possible, like the better that transition is going to be.
And early on, you were talking about the weight gain a lot of women experience around the menopause. Can you tell me a little bit about that as well, please?
Sure. So this is really interesting. And I feel like there's two different things going on here, one of which is very obvious, and the other is quite sneaky when it comes to weight gain. So the obvious piece here is that our hormonal balance is changing. Our estrogen and our progesterone levels aren't what they were when we were younger. And this causes our body to be more sensitive to stress and start to secrete a lot more stress hormones. So cortisol is the stress hormone that a lot of women are familiar with. And so what you might find is that the rest of your body perhaps looks the same, but cortisol is causing you to store fat, particularly on your abdominal area. And this comes with it a lot of other health risks. Like, it's not the healthiest place to carry your fat. And it just makes women feel really self-conscious and less feminine and unattractive and feeling like they can't wear the clothes that they want to anymore. But the sneaky part about weight gain here, especially for women who feel like, I haven't changed anything in my life. I still eat the same, I still exercise the same, but my body doesn't look the same, is that you are actually eating a bit differently and you are actually moving a bit less, even though you don't realize it. So I think as a lot of women get into midlife and there are a lot of pressures and stresses going on, we might just have like a few more glasses of wine than we used to. And because perimenopause is creeping up and we're getting those fatigue symptoms, we don't realize it, but we are actually moving a little bit less and getting in the car to go on trips rather than walking, for example. And so it can be very sneaky in that way. And so I guess that's reassuring for women that the power is within your hands to change all of this.
And I should maybe just chip in and say that, in exactly the same way, although we don't believe in a male menopause, there are changes that happen in men where the androgen levels tend to drop. So it becomes harder to put on muscle mass and sadly easier to put on fat, especially around the belly, which, as you say, is the unhealthiest part metabolically.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up as well, the muscle mass piece, because this is a big reason why women and men put on weight as they get older and get the classic, we call it the middle-age spread, don't we? Because if we haven't been proactively doing resistance training, strength training, weight training, whatever you want to call it, in order to keep muscle on our body, that's our metabolic engine. And so, after the age of 30, if we're not being proactive about keeping that muscle on our body and ideally building more, our metabolic engine reduces. So now we're not burning as much energy as we used to. And again, that's kind of sneaky. Like, we don't realize that that's going on.
So, Amy, we've defined the problem and we've agreed it is a genuine problem, and why it happens to so many of us. So let's turn to the answers. What's your answer? How can you solve this problem that I think most of us have experienced at some time in our life?
Yeah, I think when it comes to women feeling like they need to look after themselves better in perimenopause, the obvious solution is, right, I'm going to eat better, probably need to eat less, And I need to do more exercise. And if only it was as simple as that, right? Day in, day out, I'm helping women with going through this exact dilemma, and wondering why they don't feel better, why they still can't sleep well, why they still have low energy, they don't have the body they want, despite feeling like, they're doing all the things. And the number one thing that I talk about like a broken record is stress reduction. And the thing about stress is it's not just an emotional thing, it's very much a physiological thing. And we don't realize that there's so many different stressors going on in our lives, internally and on our bodies and hormonally, that are causing a lot of these symptoms of perimenopause. Like hot flushes, for example, I believe are a stress response. And so, if we can look at ways of reducing stress in our body, whether that be through the types of foods that we're eating, the type of exercise we're doing, how much sleep we're getting, how much time we're spending out in nature and walking, that kind of thing, then symptoms reduce, we feel better, and we start to look better. So for me, stress management is always like the very, very first piece. The second piece is going to be strength training, like I said before, making sure that we keep hold of that precious muscle mass that fuels our metabolic engine. And then sleep as well. And I know, easier said than done. When you're struggling with sleepless nights and insomnia and waking, or maybe like kids waking you up, easier said than done. But sleep is so underrated, and it's so critical to every element of our body and how we function as well.
And if I can give a shameless plug to one of our other podcasts, we've done one on sleep that people are welcome to look up. But can I turn back to you mentioned strength training, and there's lots of different ways of doing it, aren't they? Whether it's HIIT, whether it's resistance, different ideas about how much exercise we should do, what we should do. Tell us what you think is the optimum.
Yeah, so there's a lot of trends when it comes to exercise, isn't there? Like we see them come and go, and I've done them all. Like I've been a personal trainer for 11 years now, and obviously was into fitness for years before that. So done all the trends. And I think when it comes to perimenopause, if we think of like typical woman in her 40s, she's holding out down a full-time job, she's looking after kids, running the household. Short workouts seem like the best way to fit exercise into her life. And so we've seen a big rise in the popularity of HIIT training, which is high intensity interval training. So short bursts of intense activity followed by rest and repeated over and over. And what I've experienced in my clients is, and in myself actually, in my own body hormonally, is the disruption that HIIT training can cause to a woman's body. Like I said earlier, I talk about stress like a broken record. HIIT training is very, very stressful for a woman's body. I know it's like time efficient, we can tick that box, but it's not great if you want to support your hormones optimally and actually get a physique that you want to. So HIIT training for me goes into room 101 for perimenopausal women. And I advocate for lots of walking, lots and lots of leisure walking, slow walking so you can breathe, be in nature and chill. Like that's my favorite exercise. But when it comes to strength training, traditional resistance training, I don't think you can beat it. So if you don't know what I'm talking about by traditional strength training, we're looking at big compound exercises like the squat, the lunge, the press up, the pull up, big movements that use maximum muscles in your body, and actually progressing that to lift heavier over time, get as strong as you can to build that muscle mass, and also feel amazing. I think there's nothing more empowering as a woman than feeling super strong.
And how, so I'm envisaging this this lady in her 40s who's very stressed. She's got teenage children, holding down a full-time job, put on a bit of weight around the middle, wants to get rid of it. Where does she even start? Because to my mind, going to a gym and seeing all those very sweaty and very fit people doing exercise would put me off instantly. So how can we encourage these ladies to recognize that it is the right thing for them?
Yeah, so I think it can be, it's very common to be intimidated by going into a gym. And so hire a personal trainer. Like there's no one who's going to hold your hand more than actually being with a coach. And I spent years on the gym floor with women in their 40s and in their 50s. In fact, I built a whole gym around people who are scared to go to the gym. So I made it all like warm and fluffy, and a really welcoming space where I could empower women to enjoy exercise and actually want to get there. So honestly, like hiring a personal trainer is one of the best investments you'll ever make. But if that's not for you, then what I also find is that a lot of the women I work with, they some of the resistance and kind of feeling like a bit of a Wally and a bit silly being in a gym is that they don't know what to do. It's the kind of wandering around, looking at this weird equipment. They don't know how it works, knowing what exercises to put together or when. But when you've got a plan to follow, like a program that's been provided for you, you can have so much more confidence and really own that space. So that's typically where I see a lot of the resistance coming from women. And of course, like pick a gym that makes you feel welcome. Like don't go to the local gym that's full of 20-year-old men. But of course, training at home works really well also. And we learned that in the pandemic, right? How much we're capable of doing in our own homes. And so you can put together a perfectly good strength training workout in your own house. Go on to Facebook Marketplace or Amazon, buy yourself a set of dumbbells, and you can get going without even having to leave your house.
And that's what I do, and I find it much better than going to a gym personally, with all due respect, because of the things we've talked about. Our producer David is saying, what do you think about yoga? And I remember seeing some evidence a while ago that Tai Chi was actually a very good way of keeping fit. So it doesn't have to be this high intensity stuff, does it?
No, and we need that balance. We need the push and the pull back as well. When it comes to like getting into an exercise routine that is really going to be supportive for a female's body, yoga is absolutely beautiful. There's lots of different types of yoga, some which do feel really intense. And some that are more restorative. So my favorite types of yoga are restorative yoga or hatha yoga or yin yoga. Like they're very chill, and it really just allows a woman for like if you're going to 1 hour class or 20 minute YouTube or whatever it is, to just mentally check out of everything that's going on in your day to day. And then when you return back into your real life, you just feel like you can manage everything so much better. You're so much more resilient, so much more calm with your family. And I love that for hormone balancing as well.
And I'm certainly a great fan of the YouTube yoga classes, which is what I tend to do in the privacy of my own sitting room where I'm not embarrassed about what I'm wearing and things like that. But how do the problem I had particularly with yoga is how to recognize what exercise I can and can't do. Historically, any exercise regimes always used to be couched with don't exercise unless your doctor says it's safe and don't do this and don't do that. Have we moved away from that now? Are we allowing people to exercise more and without having to check with their doctor that it's safe first?
It's an interesting question. Obviously, if you're just training by yourself or doing yoga or whatever it is, essentially you can do whatever you want with your own body without checking in with anyone. If you're working with a health professional, like a fitness instructor or a personal trainer, like we do have an obligation to make sure that people are in a good spot, injury-wise, blood pressure and other contraindications. But if you're on your own, there's nothing that you can't do really, as long as it feels good in your body. Like no one knows your body better than you do. So we do have to listen to our bodies and make sure we can recover adequately, push to our kind of personal level of discomfort, but without doing too much.
And again, I've seen evidence saying that if you build up from wherever you are, that's the best way of not injuring yourself, is to take what level you're at and just gradually build on that. Can I turn to another area, Amy? You mentioned nutrition, and training is something where there's lots of fads and prejudices, but nutrition, diets, maybe even more so. Well, can I ask
Absolutely.
what your views are on the optimum diet, or is it different for different people?
Yeah, I would say definitely there's no one size fits all or cookie cutter when it comes to what's going to be suitable for different people, but there are just some very general rules that are going to help every single woman. And I would tell you the first place that I start with all of my perimenopausal clients who are feeling the symptoms of menopause, and they really want to change the way their body looks, is to eat more protein. And this is something which so many people struggle with. But it's a huge, huge game changer when it comes to women being able to balance their blood sugars more effectively, which then helps reduce a lot of the symptoms, which then helps them feel more full, which will help them to lose weight and feel better about themselves. And if you don't know what I mean by a protein, so mostly like good quality proteins are going to come from animal products, dairy, eggs, meat, fish, that kind of thing. And then we can also get some proteins as well from some plants. But generally what I see is that people are chronically under eating protein, and by adding it in, they feel so much better. It's like magic.
And that's certainly the diet I follow personally, and it a huge improvement in how you feel. So it gives you it stops this sort of up and down that you get with lots of sugar and short chain carbs that a lot of us eat, doesn't it? It also helps to prevent sarcopenia, which is a huge issue as we get older, where we get muscle wasting. So it's had a bit of a bad rep, hasn't it, Kate? Medically, high protein has always been linked to kidney disease, but actually the evidence is that that's not now the case.
No, and I think that's quite in historic, wasn't it? As soon as people developed kidney disease, they were told to cut out protein, but there wasn't any particular reason for that. I'm quite interested. What do you feel about carbohydrates as well, Amy? Are all carbohydrates bad, good, indifferent?
This is such an interesting topic to me because, Peter, as you said, like protein has been demonized because kidney problems, and obviously that's been debunked in the research. And then Kate's saying, like, what do you think about carbs? And so carbs have been demonized. And then back in the 70s and 80s, we weren't allowed to eat fats because fats were bad. And it's like, wow, okay, so we've just demonized all three of the macronutrients. There aren't any left. Are we going to live on air and dust now?
And at the same time that we've demonized them, the general health of the population has not improved, has it?
Yes, exactly. And so it does all come back to getting the balance right. And I know that that is a very loose term, like what does balance mean? But essentially, we need all three of those macronutrients in every single meal that we eat. So I don't think carbs are bad. I think there's better quality carbs and less good quality carbs. But what really helps a lot of my clients is avoiding eating their carbs. So let's say just bread, for example. I'm just going to pluck bread out of the air. Not eating their carbs in isolation. So say like you come home from work and you're just super tired and you're hungry and you're just craving some carbs, going for toast or biscuits or something like this is like a really easy go-to, but that can really affect us hormonally. And so I look at how can we make sure every single meal has got a good balance of proteins, fats, and carbs so we can get all of the nutrients in that we need and support our systems hormonally, give ourselves the energy that we need as well.
So
So,
what would your go-to snack be under those circumstances?
oh, what, like the end of the day,
Yeah,
come
that when you've just come in
home.
from work, you're tired and you're hungry and you haven't got much time. What would you reach for as a healthy option?
Yeah, so what, me personally, or what some of my
Yeah,
clients might
recommend.
do?
Yeah,
Yeah,
recommend.
so yeah, I quite like yogurt and fruit. I find that that's just very quick, very nutritious. You can get some fat and some protein from some nice, good quality Greek yogurt. Put in some fruit, like some berries or some chopped up apples, something like this. And recently, I've really got into adding collagen into my diet for gut health, and so stirring some collagen through yogurt or popping that into your cup of tea can help to bolster that protein and support your gut health as well. Who doesn't love a bit of fruit and yogurt?
Brilliant. Well, sadly, we're coming to the end of our time. But I think what you've said, although it's labeled perimenopause and you're doing great work around the perimenopause, I think that actually your advice applies to pretty much all of us at all age, doesn't it?
It really does. But I think in terms of perimenopause, it just becomes more critical that we're more consistent with it because we can't, quote unquote, get away with as much at that point in life. We do have to get more consistency and pay more attention to the way that we're looking after our body. But absolutely, these are good rules of practice for everybody.
Menopause is a time when women often do ignore their own needs because they put everybody else's needs first. And women over the age of 40 are tend to be seen as the invisible women. And so it's important, I think, that we promote something to make them value their own health and support everybody to be healthier, really.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. So thank you. And also for bringing the hormonal and stress elements of it, which I think are underplayed in a lot of advice on this. So, Amy, do you want to leave us with some last words of advice before we say goodbye to our listeners?
Yeah, sure, I can leave you with some final words. So, I guess if we're talking specifically around supporting perimenopause, I need to mention again stress reduction. Like this, it really is like the big message for women to look after themselves. And of course, there's many ways we can do that. But let's think about just maybe one takeaway or activity that women can take from this. If you were to look at your current to-do list and everything that you have going on in your life, what can you put on your stop doing list instead? Like, what can we take off of your plate? What can just go? What can be stopped? What can be delegated? How can we just start to minimize the amount of shoulds? I should be doing this, should be doing this, should be doing this. People pleasing activities, not having boundaries. How can we start to address that? So, what can go on to your stop doing list rather than adding to your to-do list as a way to manage our stresses?
I think that's a very helpful point to end on. Thank you very much. The only point I'd make is it's very important that perimenopausal women realize that their health is important and they do need to look after themselves as well as everybody else around them. So I think Amy's tips there have been incredibly helpful. Amy, if people wanted to follow you, how can they find you?
So if you're on Instagram, I'm Amy Body Theory. And if you hang out on Facebook, you can just find me as Amy Oldfield. So come and friend me or follow me on each of those. If you wanted to head over to my website, it's bodytheorybyamy.co.uk.
And as always, those links will be in the notes at the end of meeting. Amy, thank you very much. And to everybody who's listening today, go well.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. The show was hosted by our team of doctors, including Dr. Andrew Tresida, Dr. Peter Bagshaw, and Dr. Kate Staveley. The show was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the NHS Somerset Integrated Care Board.